Empower Radio presents The Miracle of Healing with Lisa Campion. Meet healers, learn different modalities, and hear empowering stories of people on their healing journey. The Miracle of Healing on Empower Radio. Here's your host, Lisa Campion.
Hey there, I'm Lisa Campion, and this is The Miracle of Healing on Empower Radio, where conscious people come together to explore the world of healing and heal the planet one person at a time. I'm very honored to have theoretical quantum physicist Dr. Amit Goswami as our guest today. Dr. Goswami is a retired full professor from the University of Oregon's Department of Physics, and he's a pioneer in the new paradigm of science called Science with Consciousness, an idea he explained in his book, The Self-Aware Universe. He's appeared in the film, What the Bleep Do We Know? And its sequel, Down the Rabbit Hole, as well as the documentaries, Dalai Lama Renaissance and the award-winning Quantum Activist. In his private life, Dr. Goswami is a practitioner of spirituality and transformation, and he calls himself a quantum activist. His basic premise is that quantum physics isn't only the future of science, but it's also the key to understanding consciousness, death, God, psychology, and the meaning of life. He sees quantum physics as an antidote to the moral sterility and mechanistic approach of scientific materialism, and is the best and clearest approach to understanding our universe. In short, quantum physics is the theory of everything. I just read his book, The Everything Answer Book, which bent my brain, even though I'm a lover of quantum physics, at least to dip my toe into the water as long as there's no math. The math part's just so beyond me. But in this book, Dr. Goswami and his friends and colleagues discuss, among other things, how quantum physics affects our understanding of Zen, thoughts, feelings, intuitions, dreams, karma, death, reincarnation, God's will, evolution, and purpose, and really the spiritualization of society itself. True to its name, the book is the Everything Answer Book. And I'm so excited to have this conversation, since I've always believed that quantum physics is proving what metaphysicians has really known all along. So welcome, Dr. Goswami.
Thank you. Good to be here.
I loved your book, even though it did bend my brain a lot to read it. I really do love quantum physics. And like I said, I think that it is so exciting for me as a healer, a psychic, and a metaphysician to see how this branch of science is sort of proving what metaphysicians have always known, right?
That's correct, yes. I think it's a 3,000 to 5,000-year-old idea based on actual great masters' experiences of spiritual dimensions of the world. And those experiences remain true even today, and people still experience those same truths. But there was no scientific backup. I mean, the great thing about our age, you know, living in the 21st century, is that now we can not only give a theoretical explanation of what those great masters experienced, but also experimentally verify most everything that the mystical traditions, spiritual traditions, and to some extent even religious traditions have passed on to modern people.
Wow, yeah. Can you tell me a little bit about what inspired you to write this book? Was it your own spiritual journey?
Well, actually, you know, I am one of those late comer in spirituality. I did have an early intro, but I was a rebellion against the family tradition. Family tradition was into kind of spirituality. My father was sort of a guru, but I just rebelled against the whole system because I could not verify any of it with my childish mind and childish verification techniques, of course. But, I did what I did. I chose science because all the things seemed to be very verifiable, what mm-hmm. science was saying. So I stayed a scientific materialist for a very long time, until I was about 37 and onwards. That's when I had an experience in which I had the very interesting thought of, why do I live this way? Obviously, I was feeling very unhappy, very detached, very torn between life and livelihood. Livelihood was physics and the very intellectual way of living. But life, of course, posited different problems, like loving my wife and loving my children. And those problems, physics had nothing to do with it, it seemed like. Mm. And then suddenly that question came in mind, why do I live this non-integrated way? And the conviction came that it can be better. I don't have to live this way. So that I don't have to live this way led me to, instead of the way I was doing physics, I came to do physics in a more deep way. And that seemed to lead me to quantum physics, and it did. And so I just stuck to quantum physics after that. It took me about 10 years to break through, but eventually I did. And my both my physics career and the spiritual career took off.
Mm, it's beautiful. I mean, I think as a healer, I know that so many people like me have an experience of reality that's very, very real to us, and sort of forms the backbone of how we are as people and how we are, you know, what we do for work. And it's been frustrating that that science hasn't been able to prove up until recently. It hasn't been able to prove things like energy, the human energy fields, right. You know, all these things that are real, because it's felt very, I think, invalidating, right? We're told we're crazy or you know.
Yeah, I know. We went through so much of that stuff. But isn't it amazing, though? Just when we learn to measure vital energy, and just then quantum physics came about and giving a solid physical explanation of why we not only feel those energies, but we can actually measure them, and we are measuring them. And we now have it theoretically validated as well. So we have a regular science. There is now a science of vital energy. And that, I think, is a tremendous achievement of the new science paradigm.
That's so exciting.
I think it will be a new worldview.
And can you explain, you know, in layman's terms, like what that is?
Yeah, so, you know, the question always was that physics and medicine in the allopathic way, the materialist way, would always say we know all the energies, and vital energy isn't one of them. There is no special energy connected to life as far as it shows in the physical body. They refuse to believe that there is such a thing as qi that the Chinese medicine claims, or prana that the Indian medicine claims, or vital energy that homeopathy claims. They just say the same thing. The physical body shows no sign of any transfer of any other energy than what we have, biochemical and electrical energy. And so we are stuck. And they eliminated vitalism, this idea of life energy. And there we were. So, but that is also not getting anywhere, because we know that acupuncture works, we know homeopathy works, we know Ayurveda and traditional Chinese medicine in the herbal form works as well. So it was a mystery. And then mind-body medicine came, stress-related disease came, it became very clear that mind can also go awry, give wrong meaning to things and produce disease. And then how does that happen? And then people started saying, the neuroscientists, that mind is brain, and then the question became paradoxical. Mind acts on the brain, but if mind is brain, then how can mind act on itself without cause? So nobody could answer this kind of questions. And then the breakthrough happened, which is that quantum physics began saying that, no, there are two domains of reality, because quantum objects are waves of potentiality, and when we measure them, they become particles, localized particles of actuality. Waves are spread out, they are not like particles. So this was a paradox before, by assuming that waves live in a different domain and then verifying that, yes, there is such a domain. And then the surprise, the domain actually is a domain of oneness, because it does not take any time to communicate using that domain. No signal is needed. Everything is always instantly interconnected. And then it became clear, I did that myself, that this oneness is what ancients discovered. And this is what we call consciousness at a deeper level. Then everything changes. Because if consciousness is the ground of being, then of course life energy can be a non-physical energy within consciousness, just as matter is physical energy within consciousness. Mind is another kind of stuff called meaning within consciousness. Even intuition finds a place. We say that's another kind of objects that we can call archetypes, like love, beauty, justice, those things. And they too are potentialities of consciousness. So in this way, all of our experience can be included as potentialities of consciousness. And when we choose among the possible facets of these potentialities, then we get the actuality that we experience. So in this way, vital energies are non-physical energy. What kind of non-physical energy? That connection was given by Rupert Sheldrake. Rupert Sheldrake said that physical organs require some kinds of field to switch them on, so that only specific proteins can be made out of all the proteins, all the genes. Only a few genes, selective genes, are activated in a particular organ. And that selection is made by morphogenetic fields, which are the blueprint of biological function. So then we have everything. We have the stuff that moves, whose energy we feel. That's the morphogenetic fields, blueprints of biological form and function. So you have the entire system now completely crystal clear. Everything, theory is clear. Measurement happens because we have a biochemical body. We also have a bioelectric body. And both are connected to this vital morphogenetic field. So when we feel the morphogenetic fields, it has a relationship with the organs. It also has relationship with what eventually will be measured, the bioelectric body. And so in this way, we not only have a system which will explain how physical organs are so specialized, but it will also explain how these vital energies are easy to measure. So we have a wonderful, wonderful developing science. So much future is there. So much future technology will come from using this science.
That's so exciting. And from what I understood from your book, it's that concept of consciousness is sort of the binding principle between all of those different fields.
Yes.
Yeah. And how do you think this helps us understand sort of the time honored question of our relationship to the universe and our relationship to God?
Yeah, so that's the part where we look into the subject pole of experiences. Right now, until now, I was talking only of the object pole, but every experience has two poles. One is what we experience, and the other one is who is the experiencer. We have a direct experience ourselves. We experience it. We call it the I. Now, of course, under the aegis of scientific materialism, we make everything into object. So the present culture, especially, people's experience of the I is now so diminished that many people, really, this is amazing. Many people, although they do use the word I, but they really think that consciousness is an object. It's amazing. Lisa, I just cannot believe it. But in my workshops, I teach people, and it takes me about 1 hour to explain to people and break through that, look, there is an experiencer, and that's what you call I. it's not me. It becomes me later. You look at the behavior of the eye and you think it's very objective because it's conditioned. It does the same things. You conclude that it is a conditioned eye and the eye is figurative. But eye is not figurative because you also have creative experiences. Then what? I mean, ordinary people don't have creative experiences, agreed. But people do have creative experiences. There are numerous people who have creative experiences. You cannot deny it either. And even ordinary people do, because a simple fact of understanding something is a creative experience. And you do experience, I understand, not me understands. So that is the beginning of spirituality. As soon as we start experiencing the I, if we go deeper into the experiencer, the I, the self, then eventually I find that I have a deeper self, which is cosmic in nature, does not depend on my memory. And then we can also realize that this is the one that traditionally we have called God. And this one really represents the creative power of that ground of being that we call consciousness. So in this way, we come back to that spirituality that we started with.
Yeah, I love that. The I, you know, is sort of like what the Buddhists call the compassionate witness, you know. So that is the consciousness. So we have a body, but we're more than our body. We have feelings, we're more than that. We have thoughts, we're more than that. And the I, our consciousness, is that thing that is those things and yet more than those things.
Yeah,
it's beautiful. I love that. So you say in your book that if only a small number of people transform and achieve more consciousness than the whole humanity can. Can you explain that? I love that concept.
Yes, I do too. Because this gives us hope that things can come rather quickly.
Hope. You know, we need it right now.
Now, even some measurements have been made, although I wouldn't claim that these measurements were very accurate. But the psychologist David Hawking have been writing a series of books in which he claims that muscle testing shows that only 15% of people are even capable of begin the journey of transformation. So all this spirituality that we talk about, you know, not too many people can even participate in it. But still, 15% is a huge number. Can it be even less? Because 15% of 7 billion, that's a lot of numbers, lot of people. The idea that it can be less has been, of course, in the Buddhist literature pretty early. And recently it got revitalized because an author mistook actual data on monkeys learning to wash their sweet potatoes in water before eating them. And then other monkeys in the island learned it immediately, pretty quickly. And then this author claimed that there was also data suggesting that even distant islands at a distance without any physical land connection, even those monkeys in other islands, they picked it up.
Right, the hundredth monkey theory.
That's the 100th monkey.
Yes.
And that became famous. And unfortunately, of course, the original anthropologist pointed out that, no, we never said that. We never did that experiment. So then we are in a quandary. But fortunately, Rupert Sheldrake came about with a theory. And Carl Jung already also had that idea of collective unconscious. So the theory was that there is, in the unconscious, morphogenetic fields that retain the previous learning. And then I come along and I had a theory of reincarnation based on the same idea, non-local memory. So now it's a sort of a viable theory, but the experimental data is still not conclusive. Rupert did some experiment himself, but never got a conclusive showing that indeed it is possible to learn something before it has been, because it has been learned before. And especially where the data is very much lacking is that's how does it get into the gene pool eventually, because that would be the simplest way that people would change. But I don't think that it would ever need to be transferred to the gene pool, because morphogenetic field builds the brain. So if the morphogenetic field come with the idea of positive emotional brain circuits, then the brain of future people will have that ready-made brain with positive emotional brain circuit, which will negate to some extent our negative emotional brain circuits. So indeed, it's possible. So
humanity is sort of evolving as a whole through the collective consciousness.
It sort of drags everybody with, right? Yeah, I think that the crucial point that we have to recognize is that we still don't know what the actual number is for the threshold. But we have a feeling that if we can make transformation, these brain circuits, positive brain circuits, like, you know, I'm confident that I have them. I'm confident that, you know, people who are even much more transformed than I am, like Mother Teresa, Saint Teresa, I should say, she had them. Mahatma Gandhi had them. And so these people's brain would show positive emotional brain circuit. The point is that at what point does it become, instead of personal, becomes collective? Mm-hmm. And that's the part where we need both experimentation. And my feeling is that we need to practice these transformational practices in a collective, in a community. And these communities existed before, because in our previous human societies, we lived in tribes. Nowadays, we live in tribes to some extent, but we don't do spiritual practices as a tribe. We do have tribal mentality, but usually they show only the negative side of humanity, because that's what we have in our brain. But if we could now practice the positive side, and develop the positive side, this positive emotional brain circuit, together with other human beings living in a community, then I'm convinced that we could probably in a few generations change the entire humanity through this medium of non-local memory contained in the morphogenetic field, sort of a collective unconscious.
And maybe that's the real role of gurus and spiritual teachers.
That could be the contribution of the great spiritual teachers. You are right. And I think that comment has been made before, and one can indeed put your money on it. That's a crude way of putting it, I know, but yeah.
Yeah, well, let's hope. I think our humanity needs a little hope. I find that conversation so uplifting.
Yeah.
And I love what you said about doing spiritual community too. It seems important. So I want to just give you an opportunity to share your website. So if people wanted to read your book, which is fabulous, how could they get it, and how could they get in touch with you if they wanted to work with you?
Okay, it's very simple. I have a website, amitgoswami.org, amitgoswami.org. And if you go to the website, you will find all my books. Of course, Amazon.com sells them, and all the major booksellers and all the alternative bookstores, every one of them will have my books, no question about it. And also, if you go to the website, you'll get all my current events. Especially, I'm very excited about a video course that I'm giving starting this weekend, 1 month course, under the auspices of GlideWing, GlideWing, GlideWing Corporation. Look it up. It is announced on my website. You can also go to their website, GlideWing, and you will find a course on quantum enlightenment, the very subject we just touched.
I'm gonna take that class. I'm gonna check it out, and I encourage all of our listeners to read your book and also check out your class. I'm sure it's wonderful, and I think it's so inspiring what you're doing, and I really really appreciate you being on the show with us today.
Thank you, Lisa. That's great.
It's so wonderful. So that's wonderful. I hope that people get a chance to really be exposed to your work because it's so uplifting and inspiring.
Thank you.
So, and if you'd like to reach me, you can find me at my website, lisacampion.com. Dr. Goswami's work is also available. You can find the link on the Empower Radio website. So check out the link on the website. And thank you so much for joining me and Dr. Goswami on today on The Miracle of Healing, where we are healing the planet one person at a time here on Empower Radio.